Hi there, I'm Chris Dashew.
I'm Mike White.
And this is Father Malone.
And we are the hosts of Dreams for Sale, a once-a-month look at the Twilight Zone 1985, the only remake of the show worth watching, quoted by Father Malone.
Yeah, I'll say it again.
On every episode of Dreams for Sale, we take a look at one episode of the show from 1985. On this episode, we're taking a look at episode 15, otherwise known as episode 15, that aired January 24th, 1986. That episode is broken into three segments: Monsters! Exclamation point, Small Talent for War, and A Matter of Minutes.
What happened to January 10th's episode?
It's a good question.
It just kind of skipped over from January 3rd to January 24th.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Weird, right?
Yeah. What the fuck is going on in this Monsters episode? Can somebody explain to me?
No. No.
Okay.
Monsters, it felt like, this is around the same time this movie came out, it feels like the opposite side of the coin of Fright Night.
Yeah.
Where you have a kid who's sort of obsessed with monsters, and then he runs into a vampire, where in the case of Fright Night, it's fucking awesome, and in this case, it's the stupidest thing ever.
It's weird because, like you said, Father Malone, it feels like dumb Fright Night. Like, it actually feels like Fright Night for dum-dums.
Fright Night, like, as a children's book.
Right. Like, oh, you know, and then, like, the nice monster man goes and talks to the kid. Like, okay.
Uh-huh.
I also think this episode is a perfect example of watching a quality actor and what they can do to a script, as opposed to a terrible actor and how they, don't necessarily bring the level of the writing down, but just expose the writing. Because watching this kid, was it Oliver Barrett? Is that his name? From Poltergeist?
Oliver Robbins.
Yeah. Oliver Robbins. Yeah, like, watching his performance, it's I can understand why we didn't see any more of him after Poltergeist 2.
It was the curse.
It was the curse, right? Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Oh, hey, man, I'm going to make a new movie on Shudder just about cursed movies. Yeah, because that's never been done before.
Hey, now, no. We haven't even gotten a chance to watch the documentary yet, and you're already throwing dirt on it? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Watching Ralph Bellamy playing off of this kid, and Ralph Bellamy, every line he imbues with a level of gravitas the script does not deserve, watching this kid just sort of parrot the lines, like, oh my God, it made it worse in a way that Ralph Bellamy had to be in this episode.
Well, he feels just about as wasted as one would expect him to feel in an episode that is mired in such saccharine melancholy as this one.
Maudlin.
Yeah, it is, like, I've come here to die, my son. Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, you're not even gonna tell us what you are. I am a vampire, but not a vampire. Not the kind of vampire you know. Well, then you're not a vampire.
Yeah, he's the kind of vampire who, I guess, just has extra strength and needs to drink blood, because clearly he's aging. I mean, he's supposed to be 147 years old, but, like, he doesn't seem... It's not like Dracula, who is young from this point to this point. It's just like, it's an old man who has grown old and can lift cars, and that's it. Like, and makes everyone sick around him. What, by the way, what was that fucking subplot?
That was so strange.
That's how you die. You have to go around people to die.
So stupid. Like, I kept thinking, like, just put a fucking bullet in your mouth if you're going to do this. Like, why are you turning these people into monsters? And what sort of clumsy, fucking childish metaphor of, like, humans will, you know, have to stamp out something that's different around them? It's like, monsters are due on Maple Street for morons. Like, and these people, like, putting aside all the text and subtext that was nonsense, just on a purely technical level, these people transform into these monsters. They show that their clothes are sort of, like, ripping because they've transformed, and then they all go, like, I don't know what happened last night. Like, look at your clothing, morons. Something really bad happened. Like, they're just like, oh, I just fell asleep. I don't know.
The monsters are due on Moron Street.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Yeah, like, wouldn't they be covered in blood? They're like, there was blood everywhere. Like, well, why did they not wake up in the morning in their beds and be like, oh, my God,
no, that's right.
Fucking blood come from? Like, oh, nope, just shrug that off. Look at the fireflies, guys.
Yeah, oh, my God. Did I say maudlin? Holy Jesus. I'm going to take it away. It feels like during this particular period in the 1980s, we had a lot of this going on. Like, I think a lot of Joe Dante's work and Steven Spielberg's work, this sort of fascination with childhood, but the child who was a little bit different. They read the monster magazines. We kind of kept getting these characters over and over again. But also, like, this misguided appropriation of Ray Bradbury, where, like, a moment like those characters going off to look at the fireflies feels like it's stolen from a Bradbury book that was never written. But I also know that if it had been in a Bradbury book, it would have been beautiful and not fucking sentimental nonsense, which is what we got.
It was not good. It was so not good.
Mike, I love your just, it was not good.
No, I mean,
that sums it up.
Yeah, I was just sitting there going, okay, I understand if you want to, like, reimagine the vampire myth and you want to do some different things. The whole idea of, like, okay, he comes to town and people get sick. I'm like, all right, that kind of makes sense, like him being a plague bearer and being, you know, like Nosferatu being associated with rats and things. I'm like, okay, that's cool. But yeah, them changing into monsters and stuff, I was like, this, yeah. I checked out. I was just like, this is not good. It's not good at all.
Well, and to be fair, is there really anything to check into?
No, I couldn't get invested in this.
I think that that's entirely the fault of the episode, because it's just, there's so little going on that it's honestly shocking that this segment is 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Nothing happens on top of everything else.
Hey, little boy. Come on out in your pajamas and come sit on my lap in a cemetery.
Okay.
Yeah, that wasn't creepy.
That is aged about as poorly as Meryl Streep's Oscar award speech, where she talks about how much she loves Harvey Weinstein. So, or Renee Zellweger, or Jennifer Lawrence. I could go on, but I won't, because they know better and they don't care. But it's creepy where he's like, come on outside, little boy. Like, oh dear, what?
Also, has this child never heard of a doggy bag? I just throw that out there. He picks up like 6 pieces of fucking pizza and just puts it under his arm and walks out of that restaurant.
It's like a newspaper, like, isn't it?
Yeah. Couldn't the 147-year-old man have said, I think there's a better way to convey those things, son?
Right. No.
You know, I've been around for 147 years, and by Jove, I've never seen a kid as fucking stupid as you. not using one of those boxes that they put the pizza in to deliver it. You could have one to take the pizza home with you, you little fucking idiot. Like, this is a bizarre episode, right? Just up and down bizarre.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what do they become at the end of the segment? Like werewolves?
I think they were supposed to be werewolves, because all we got was a shot of the foot, which was furry. Clearly, they just didn't have the budget to give us a full transformation on any of these things. But yeah, like, muddle-headed. Just, I this one was baffling.
It's not the worst segment that we've seen, but it's really bad. So, let's move on to the next segment, A Small Talent for War.
If we are pawns of dark powers, then even our highest aspirations become a grim joke. But if not, then no one will goad us toward world peace, or take it away once we've achieved it. Doubters, please note, you've just seen it achieved once, however briefly, in the Twilight Zone.
So it's directed by Claudia Wheel, written by our good friend Alan Brennert and Carter Schatz, and it stars everyone's favorite billionaire, Donald Clamp, John Glover, as an alien ambassador, who says...
He's also Lionel Luther, so he is a billionaire on a couple of different platforms.
Yeah.
I just know him as Daniel Clamp. Donald Clamp? Daniel Clamp? He fights gremlins, Daniel. Folks.
I just know he's fantastic. I love him so much.
John Glover's so
Me
good
too.
In everything,
yeah.
Right?
Even that, like, little piece of shit role that he had in, RoboCop 2, it's like, you expect him to be in the whole movie, and he's just in, like, one commercial. I'm like, what the fuck, man? What's going on?
Yeah, he enlivens everything. I remember 52 Pickup? Oh, my God. He blows everyone out of the water. John Glover is amazing. It's weird that they kind of lowered his voice. Because
yeah, hello, that was strange.
What the fuck? Like, what an interesting choice.
Like, yeah, because, like, his demeanor alone is so alien and fucking menacing. Like, that seems like overkill. Uh-huh. But I got to say, this is one of those segments like Shadow Man that I saw when I was a kid when it first aired and stuck with me. And I think this is everything the Twilight Zone is supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, I know you designed the logo for the show, and there he is, like, front and center. I was like, oh, this must have a special meaning to Father Malone.
I did put him in there. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I, even if this wasn't that spectacular a segment, the fact that John Glover was on the show, to me, would have, nominated him for memorialization on our logo.
Well, I think it is a pretty darn good episode, and I like the whole thing. I mean, it's what we talked about on the last time that we got together and discussed things was it's got a Twilight Zone twist. You know, it's got the old twist to it where this guy comes and like, hey, you know, it's very Roddenberry, like, hey, we're judging humanity and you guys are really screwed up. And so then they all get together, work out all these peace treaties, all this kind of stuff. Humanity bands together, finally makes it here. You know, the guy comes back. All right, here we are. We've all got peace. He's just like, I wasn't looking for that.
Later, fucking nerds. I'm out of here.
See ya.
It's the stinger to this episode is great. He's just like, yeah, okay, mic drop. I'm out. Bye bye. It's like, I'm gonna kill you. You're all gone.
He's so bemused by it, too. Like, I couldn't even be mad at him.
Right.
As this ambassador. He's like, really? This is what you did? Oh, no, you poor things.
Right, yeah.
Good for you, but, you know.
And then it's like, oh, you guys long for peace and you can't get out of your way long enough to do it until the aliens show up to literally destroy you? Okay, bye.
Good episode. Good segment.
Yeah, and it's all,
right
like,
to,
what,
right to the
6 minutes?
Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
short and sweet.
Gotta love it.
Yeah, it's great. And, I mean, look, everyone pretty much else is, you know, just kind of doing a, not like a stereotypical bit, but kind of, right?
Mm-hmm.
First thing I ever saw him in was Gremlins 2, and I did, like, every time I see him in something, I'm just like, man, this guy just, every time.
Welcome to the bathroom, mister. That's my favorite joke in that movie.
So good.
Remember when he's in the Mouth of Madness as the doctor at the beginning for no reason than other than because he's John Glover? Me too. So let's talk about the final segment of the episode, A Matter of Minutes.
Time, a handy fiction to explain why everything doesn't happen all at once. Or maybe we're the fiction, moving minute by minute through the Twilight Zone.
So Matter of Minutes is directed by Sheldon Larry, written by Harlan Ellison and Rockne O'Bannon. So, you know, the setup, we're looking good so far. It is based on a Theodore Sturgeon short story, Yesterday Was Monday, and it stars Adam Arkin.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Boy.
That's right.
You got all these folks together.
The thing about this is just that I feel like I've seen this so many times before, and I don't know if it's just that I have a really good memory of this particular episode, but I was just like, okay, yeah, this, yeah, I've seen this.
So okay. Here's the thing. I've never seen this before, and even I felt like I'd seen this before.
Okay. All right.
Good. I've seen tropes of this. Like, other things I've seen are like this, and it wasn't interesting then, and it's not interesting now.
Wasn't there an original Twilight Zone that was exactly this, or very close to it?
Which one would that be?
I just remember a guy. Well, actually, you know what? I take it back. It was a guy who was running around a city, and he couldn't find anybody, and then finally he, like, turns around, and he's on a movie set. And it's like, what? And he's confused, I'm confused. So it just kind of reminded me of that, like, shift of that reality kind of thing.
That's funny. That episode was called Where Is Everybody? It's actually pilot for the Twilight Zone, the original Twilight Zone television series. Mm. I too, gentlemen, felt like I had seen this story 1,000 times before. Nevertheless, I don't think I could point to any story that it actually is aping, but it gives off this weird vibe of seeing this. This is not an original concept, not an original thought. What a weird phenomena.
Right. Ooh, it's like the Mandela effect.
It's true.
You mean they're the Berenstain Bears, not the Berenstain Bears?
It's pretty Instain, dude.
There's a whole movie about the Mandela effect now.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Just what we needed.
We've been waiting for that. Yeah. I'm sure Blumhouse put it out. Or wait, I think it's even like sub-Blumhouse.
Oh, to be fair, isn't just Blumhouse some Blumhouse? Because, you know, they definitely didn't release Truth or Dare and Fantasy Island with the same lead in both of them. So it's going to throw that out there. But they did make Get Out, so, you know, don't forget that. Yeah, because
the
they
producers
haven't.
Of Get Out. By the way, speaking to that, don't you love when you watch a movie trailer and it says, from the studio that brought you. What? Who gives a shit?
From one guy who may have been in a room when someone was talking about something that you may like.
My second favorite sort of trailer thing is the from one of the producers of.
Right. I always liked what they did with, I think it might have been Hot Shots, where it was like, from the brother of the producer of Ghost.
Yes, that was brilliant.
That was good.
I mean, Hot Shots is an American cinema classic.
Hell yes, it is.
No, I was watching it over the weekend. I hadn't seen it in the longest time. Oh. And everything about that movie is what you want when someone who knows what they're doing makes something amazing. And what I can't for the life of me understand is, how did Harlan Ellison and Rockne O'Bannon not make magic here? Really? Yeah. I don't get it.
Shocking.
I mean, it's bizarre, honestly.
I can't say, oh man, this is bad. I'm just like, meh. It's just so meh to me.
But wouldn't it be better if it was bad? Because then we could be like, this is bad. As opposed to, yeah, there's a bunch of blue stuff and a bunch of blue dudes walking around. And yeah, time. Isn't time weird? Like, no.
My favorite part of the whole episode is, I'm going to describe this as boxcars, train boxcars. And now I'll tap on a computer and I'm going to show you train boxcars. Because apparently this is such a complicated notion that I have to over-explain it to you.
Do you know what boxcars are?
When it seems like the most simple a what?
Let me show you.
Oh, my God.
It's real dumb. Like, it's insultingly stupid.
Yeah.
And then, like, the guy in yellow, that's literally his character name, or supervisor, just goes, I can't let you leave, okay?
Yeah, because we need some stakes now, because ultimately all this is a concept of what time is. There's no story to be had at all.
Yeah. All like, it is time catches up to itself.
Right. And, like, these two characters are just sort of ciphers who are experiencing it and, like, acting as proxies for the audience because there's no inherent thing about them and their relation to time or anything. It's just, here it is. Here's a concept for you. And now we have to give you some stakes. You're going to have to stay here forever. Okay, sure.
But stay there forever doing what?
Yeah, exactly. What, do they become the blue people? Like, maybe that could have been something interesting. All of these faceless drones you see are people who have fallen through time, and now they have to work at it forever. Like, something.
And then one of them, and then I guess Alan Arkin's character goes, oh yeah, by the way, I have a friend who would totally be into me telling him about this. What?
He writes for Omni.
Yeah. I think it's Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Everything about this segment is what I have had a problem with this show from the get-go. It just sometimes the ideas seem too interesting for their own good and the execution is just, it's not a bad idea. I think we can all agree it's not an inherently bad idea, but I don't think the execution is remotely there.
Mm-mm. Yeah, it seems like, well, to speak to the idea that this is sort of the worst element of this Twilight Zone, I disagree with you because I think the sort of more sentimental and maudlin segments that they kind of traffic in too much is the problem with the show. But there is a definite disconnect between the writer's room where when it comes to, like, this is such a good concept, let's craft a story, and then they don't really craft a story at all. They just kind of throw the concept at us. And, like, maybe as a 5-minute segment in the middle, that could have been okay, but, like, don't stretch it out to what is effectively the length of an old Twilight Zone episode and not give us something. Like, you know, Rod Serling, for all of his purple prose, would have at least, like, given us a plot and characters involved in this world. Like, just, yeah, I don't know.
And, you know, Adam Arkin, he's great at playing jerks, so I'm not, like, sympathizing with him as a protagonist. I'm just like, okay, yeah, you're gonna get stuck there. I don't really care, Adam. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't care either.
Yeah. His best work was when he was in Northern Exposure, just playing this complete, you know, just this guy that didn't want humanity to even bother him. I was like, okay, yeah, that suits you.
He also played, like, the head of a neo-Nazi group on Sons of Anarchy. He was equally adept at that.
Oh, nice. Which is very ironic since he is very Jewish.
Exactly.
I wanted to like this. I really did.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It just wasn't there, man, which is a bummer. I don't.
C'est la vie.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where it went wrong. I really don't.
Yep.
All right, so in the next episode of Dreams for Sale, we're going to be talking about episode 16 of the show. We are closing in on the end of the season. We've got another 8 episodes past the next one, but on the 16th episode, we're going to be talking about 3 more segments: The Elevator, To See the Invisible Man, and Tooth and Consequences. And one of those is written by Ray Bradbury.
And one of those segments is really good.
I'm hoping you're talking about the same one I'm thinking of, but we'll talk off air.
And I have seen none of it, so I am excited to hopefully see good and bad. So until then, where can people find you, Father Malone?
Hit me up on my YouTube channel, Odd5Films. Check out my series. I'm not even going to name it, but go to Odd5Films.
Wait, why aren't you going to name it?
No, it's okay. And you can also hear me over on Chronicles from the Crypt, a podcast about the HBO television series Tales from the Crypt based on the EC comics. And you can always hear me fighting with Jess Byard about Bugsy Malone over on the Culture Cast.
It's true. It's true. There was a bit of a contentious podcast there because some people don't like when a 14-year-old Jodie Foster talks about sucking dick and God.
Nothing more natural in the world. Hey.
I've seen Taxi Driver. I know she can do it.
You know that
she'll make
that's
your
her
dick
thing.
Explode, man.
On that note, where can people find you, Mike White?
Well, when my dick isn't exploding, I am talking about Barney Miller at the Life and Times of Captain Barney Miller podcast, as well as talking about movies over at the Projection Booth podcast, which you can find at, oddly enough, projectionboothpodcast.com.
And as for myself, I'm not even going to address the things that Mike White has been saying, because what can one say to that? You can find me on the Culture Cast, where I talk about movies. You can find me on the One Season Show, where I talk about shows that only lasted one season. And on Chronicles from the Crypt, where we talk about Tales from the Crypt. TwilightZone85.com is where you can find more episodes of this show. TwilightZone85 is what we are at on Twitter. If you want to tell us how good or bad of a job we're doing, or just not say anything at all, which seems to be the case. Roxy Drive and Neutron Dreams provided the music for the podcast. Big thanks to them. We'll catch you on the next episode.